here yet. Expect it momentarily. I would like, I'm sure everyone here knows our new Superintendent of Public Instruction, Susan Castillo. Susan, would you please come up and introduce the folks from your department here and whomever you are mine to introduce. So we will introduce committee staff a little bit later.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Susan Castillo, Superintendent of Public Instruction for the state of Oregon. That's my first time that I've gotten to say that. It's exciting. thank you so much for inviting me to come up, and I just want to first of all say how much the department looks forward to working with you this session. We want to be helpful to you and provide you with whatever information that you need, and so we just very much want to do whatever we can to help you with the important work that you're going to be doing this legislative session. And excuse me, I still don't have my voice back here, but did want to introduce the folks who are going to be presenting to you today about the Reading First initiative that we have going in our state, which is quite exciting. Pat Burke is the Education Policy Deputy for the department. Mardale Dunsworth is one of the directors in the Curriculum Office. And Julie Anderson is an English specialist in the department. And they are here and excited about talking with you about Reading First. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We are, as a committee, really blessed to have a continuing expert and staff administrator, committee staff administrator, who's been in education administration for how many years, Jan?
Well, my first education committee was in 1995-7. One of those. Over on the House side. And then starting in, I guess it was 97, I came over to the Senate side, so I've been there ever since.
And she is dedicated to education administration this session in the Senate, and we appreciate that. We're going to work her real hard. Would you introduce your assistants?
Yes, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. We're lucky to have Romy Dye helping us this session. She's also going to be helping one of the Senate Business Committee. So we have her half time, and she'll be very busy. And she's new to the legislature this session.
Thank you very much. Senator Marcette, it's welcome you to this committee.
Thank you.
And, would you tell us about yourself and your interests here?
Well, my background is as a high school teacher in District 19, City of Springfield. I spent 28 and a half years in the classroom. I went into teaching to teach, and I had to make a choice early on whether or not to follow the administrative track or the teaching track, and I felt that there should be two separate places. I mean, it bothered me that good teachers were rewarded by being taken out of the classroom. So I enjoyed very, very much my time, and I felt fulfilled as a teacher. That was something that I really, and it made up for the lack of compensation. I worked at two jobs. I have eight kids, and so I had to work on the weekends in order to make ends meet. But to me, that was worth the effort that I put into teaching, and there was no such thing as a time clock because I would spend evenings and weekends at school and most of the summer in various conferences and so on. So I bring that experience, and I did serve in the House in 1999, that session, as the vice chair in the Education Committee, and last session I was on the Education Committee under the leadership of Representative Vic Backlund, who I admire greatly. I think that he did an admirable job in chairing that committee, and there was lots of input on what we heard and what we did, and so I look forward to continuing under the leadership of Senator Starr on the Education Committee this time, and I will be anxious to see what changes, perhaps, or refinements in the policy is as we go along. So I'm very, very pleased to be here.
Thank you very much. Senator Farioli.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
We're introducing ourselves and appreciate having you again as a committee member. We've just had the introduction of new Superintendent of Public Instruction, and some of her staff is going to be presenting to us today. Any comments you'd like to make?
Mr. Chairman, the focus of attention for many of the folks in this legislative process will continue to be education funding, and education accountability. And it's a delight to be again on the Education Chairman Committee under your chairmanship. I thought we did good work in the last legislative session. We have a new Superintendent of Public Instruction, our former colleague from the Senate. Senator Castillo takes on a new role. I'll be anxious to work with her in support of education. The Oregonian was running a series on education financing, which is a reminder to all of us about the effects of Measure 5 and Measure 39 and 40 on education funding and the equity funding formulas and some of the other issues that we will deal with in our revenue committee. It's interesting to watch how the education committee and the revenue committee interlock in the Senate. But I'm glad to be here. I'm anxious to undertake some of the recommendations that were made by interim committees, one of which I served on, which was the interim committee on special education funding. There's a series of recommendations that will come to this committee that I think are worth looking at. I served on the special education component of that committee, and it looked at several other aspects of education funding. I think we might help ourselves in this process by looking at some of those recommendations. So I'm anxious to see that work continue. I'm glad to be here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, we do have a committee quorum here, and I'm going to gavel the committee to order. First order of business on our is organization of the meeting and adoption of committee rules. These are pretty standard rules, and for a four-person committee, it makes some changes relevant to the former Senate rules. So are there questions, committee members?
Mr. Chairman, are we in work session? If that's
we are in work session for adoption of the committee rules.
Some of them, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farioli has moved adoption of committee rules. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We have, as our agenda today, informational meeting. And Senator Castillo has already introduced our three-member presentation committee. Would you please come forward? Pat, and we're going to hear about federal legislation, No Child Left Behind, and as part of that, the implementation of Reading First, which is we are a part of and have been blessed with some federal dollars in order to implement.
We are, Senator, very excited to be here. Can I get the overhead on, please? Great. Thank you very much. Senator Starr, members of the committee, we are indeed delighted to be here today. For your record, I am Patrick Burke, B-U-R-K, and I am the Deputy Superintendent for Educational Policy of the Department of Education. To my immediate right is Mardale Dunsworth, who is Director of Curriculum in the Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services, and to her right is Julie Anderson, who is the Department's Specialist in English Literacy. And we are truly delighted to be here. I really want to echo what Superintendent Castillo said. We recognize that before this committee, during this session, there will be a number of very complex and difficult issues. Senator Farioli mentioned finance and continuing some of the work that is already receiving a lot of attention. We also know that there are a number of issues involving the new federal legislation, as well as the ongoing work of school improvement in our state. We are at your disposal. We are interested in establishing a positive and productive working relationship with this committee. By way of a little bit of history, by way of introduction, I want to take us back very briefly 20 years. In April of 1983, a document was published that significantly changed American public education, and a document from which we are still working. And that document, of course, was A Nation at Risk. And if you remember A Nation at Risk, it published data on American students in comparison to students in other countries, but with a very different focus. Instead of focusing on the inputs of education, amount of money spent, textbooks, class size, age of school buildings, and so on, the focus of A Nation at Risk was on the outputs of American education and whether or not students were demonstrating that they had mastered a level of knowledge and skill that was comparable to other countries. And as you may recall, American public education came out lacking in that report. And that caused a great deal of response to address the issues, including, in one of the points I wanted to make, Mr. Chair, at the very beginning of our relationship this year, is my thanks to the Oregon Legislature for its continued response and focus on addressing these issues. By 1985, right after the report was published, the Oregon Legislature adopted the first set of common curriculum goals for our state and began a process of clarifying, well, what are the things that we want our students to know and to be able to do? By 1987, the legislature had approved what was commonly known as House Bill 2020, but what it did is it provided funding for local schools and school districts to do the teacher preparation and training to begin to accelerate student achievement. And what was significant about 2020 is that it required a local school committee that later became site councils that significantly involved parents and teachers in this essential planning. By the 1991 session, the legislature passed House Bill 3565 of the Oregon Education Act for the 21st century and further began that process of clarifying what our expectations were and adding to the discussion assessment strategies. In 1993, significant changes in the assessment and in the high school graduation requirements were made. By 1995, House Bill 2991 was adopted by the legislature, and that bill made significant changes where the legislature asked for more clarity about the academic content standards or the expectations of student performance and established standards and performance benchmarks for our students to achieve. In the first year, 1996, for example, for purposes of our committee work today, third graders in the state of Oregon achieved those standards at a rate of 52%. That figure in the most recent data now stands at 85%. So from 1996 to the present day, a significant improvement in third grade reading across our state. Of course, the problem is that as that remaining 15% becomes more clearly defined, we find in that 15% students who have more complex problems, special education students, students who don't speak English, and so on. 1997, we also saw a very significant change by the legislature, which was the approval of the Oregon State Report Card. Senator Farioli mentioned in his remarks an interest in accountability. For now 20 years, this state has demonstrated a strong interest in accountability, and the adoption of the report card was a major step in that direction. Next week, version 4 of the Oregon State Report Card will be released. A point, by the way, that I might mention, Mr. Chair, is well ahead of the requirement of the new federal law, which now requires every state to have a report card. Oregon is now in year four of meeting that requirement. By 1999, last session of the legislature, we saw significant linkages to the community. At that point, obviously, a great deal of conversation about our current financial situation. But while all of that was going on, in 2001, and then signed by the President in January of 2002, was the No Child Left Behind Act. So what we've seen in that 20-year period of time is a focus on clearing a clear set of academic standards for our students, a clearly aligned set of assessment practices, and public accountability on the school's ability to have our students meet those standards. Now, within that context, then, Mr. Chair, I'd like to begin to give at least a brief overview, and let me underline brief. This is a complex act. We are at your disposal to come back and do in-depth conversation with your committee about the details of No Child Left Behind. But our topic today is the Reading First grant, which is a part of No Child Left Behind. So let me lay just a little context. No Child Left Behind is actually the most recent iteration of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. ESEA was originally approved in 1965 under the Johnson administration as part of the Great Society program. It represents the single largest contribution of federal dollars to American public education, although there are certainly others. And the funds, from the very beginning, have been targeted to students who are poor and students who have limited English proficiencies. Funds are provided to offer supplemental support for innovative programs, strategies, and we are delighted in the current legislation additions in technology to assist school districts in meeting the needs of the students most in need of assistance. It is a major source of professional development for teachers and principals, and particularly the new version of the Act does that even more. And the new version of the law represents approximately a $26 million increase. Now, this is very difficult, Mr. Chair, to nail down because some parts of the Act actually canceled programs that were funded. So when we have an opportunity, we can provide you some in-depth detail on the budget and what actually happened with the new federal dollars. The purpose of the Act is contained in this sentence that is drawn directly from the Act. It is to ensure that all children, and the focus of this Act truly does focus on all children, having a fair, equal, and significant opportunity to obtain a high-quality education and to reach, at a minimum, proficiency on challenging state academic achievement standards and state academic assessments. It's a quote from No Child Left Behind. So what the law requires states to do, therefore, is to have a clear set of challenging academic standards and a set of assessments that are directly linked to those standards. There are six areas of focus in the legislation. Rigorous standards and assessments. An emphasis on success for all students. Accountability for results, and when we have an opportunity, there are several changes, quite significant, about accountability in this statute. It does provide much more flexibility to local districts to target the resources as they need them. It has significant improvement and changes in the empowerment of parents under the Act, and a very strong focus on improving teacher quality. In the state of Oregon, there are many elements of the Act that we are currently well ahead of. For example, the Act requires a federally approved assessment system, and that system must be aligned to a clear set of standards and assessment practices identified by the state. I'm pleased to report that the state of Oregon is one of only 16 states in the United States that already meets that criteria, and in fact our state was the first state in the United States to have its assessment system approved by the federal government. The Act requires that every state have a report card, and that that report card provides specific detailed information to parents on not only their district, but each individual school. And as I mentioned a moment ago, the Oregon legislature approved just that type of report card 4 years ago. So those parts of the Act we are already well underway to meeting. We, of course, are facing a financial crisis. We know that we have a lot to talk about there. And since we are talking about funds that are designed to improve overall student achievement, then helping build the capacity at the local level to do so. And it's within that context that the Reading First funds are available. It provides new support in a variety of areas. Reading First. The focus is on what you hear a buzzword, and I try very hard, Mr. Chair, to not use buzzwords, but you are going to hear this periodically throughout the year, scientifically based reading instruction. We'll talk in a moment about what that means, but that is a focus in the law. A focus on the quality of the materials that are used in our classrooms to teach reading, a focus on the training and professional development of teachers to use scientifically based strategies, and to have valid and reliable assessments for screening, diagnosis, improving our instruction, and overall evaluation of the program. We are very pleased to be one of the few states to get this award. We have $7.3 million in the current school year and expect $8.23 in the coming year. And as Senator Farioli said, there is a strong focus on accountability and significant involvement at the state level. And I should say, not just at the state level with the Department of Education, but significant major involvement with university partners. We are extremely pleased, and as I mentioned to the chair earlier, Dr. Ed Kamanui of the University of Oregon, who is one of the nation's leading researchers in this area, was invited to our meeting today. He is currently out of the state, but expressed his desire to come to your committee at your request. Well, Reading First has a couple of basic premises to it, and that is that all but a very small number of children can learn to read successfully. Now, it doesn't mean that all but a very small number of children learn to read successfully at exactly the same time or in the exact same way, but that given appropriate time and quality instruction, all children can learn to read successfully. The second premise is that the prevention of reading difficulties is far more cost-effective than remediation. That perhaps goes without saying, but early intervention, getting kids off to an appropriate start, is at the core of the bill. Failure can be prevented by using instructional practices that have proven their effectiveness. There is a strong body of work available in this area of scientifically based research on reading. It has a tendency to be consistent over different fads that appear in the field, and it is also a way of looking at laying an appropriate foundation that makes subsequent literacy and mastery of other skills much easier for the student to achieve. So what is this concept? What does it mean? Well, the law, the federal law, defines it. It first of all says that for a program to meet scientifically based research criteria, it has to be based on valid knowledge relevant to reading development, instruction, and reading difficulties. In other words, that there is a body of research behind the strategy. That it employs empirical methods. In other words, somebody is collecting data on these methods and reporting their observations in a scientific manner. That it involves rigorous data analysis that are adequate to test the effectiveness of that particular reading methodology. It relies on measures that can be replicated, and that it relies on more than one measure, and that it has been accepted in a peer-reviewed journal. In other words, that there is a scientific dialogue or conversation about the reading strategies that are employed. So that, by way of background, brings us to the grant itself. My colleague Julie Anderson is going to take you through some of the information about how we are implementing this part of No Child Left Behind. Julie?
Okay, thank you, Pat. Senator Starr and committee, can I sit back? Can you still hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm very pleased to be here today and to talk about a wonderful piece of legislation that could make a difference for a lot of students in our country and of course, in the state of Oregon. So we're very pleased to have received the grant. Pat did an excellent job of giving a summary to you. And what I thought I would start with, because Pat spoke of the research phase, the next slide refers to what the compilations of research really are and what's available to the field as resources to look at scientifically based reading research. And the first document, number one there, Preventing Reading Difficulties in Young Children, was published in 1998 by the National Research Council, and it was under funding from the National Academy of Sciences. The people on this committee range from pediatricians to reading scholars. A few engineering people with those kinds of backgrounds were included because it had to do with the very, very strict definition of research base, as Pat just pointed out to you. And these people came together, took a look at all of the research that had been done over the previous 20 to 25 years, and particularly in the areas of special education for students who seemed resistant to the usual methods of teaching reading, and put together this book, which has been widely accepted in our state and widely respected as a resource on teaching reading to children, especially children that are in danger of not reading automatically by the end of first grade. Then Congress was pleased with this, but they decided to spend money, and I'm skipping to number three, we kind of got them out of order, to spend money for a piece of work that took longer than was expected. It was 2 years in the compiling of research from the field that could be determined to have used these methods. And so this report, which is a 1,000-page report, and this you have in your folder is an overview of it, pulled together what the committee found, what the panel found. In other words, of the strategies that were discussed here, how did they really play out in the classroom? And with what populations of children? And Congress particularly wanted a good look at high poverty schools and what methods described here worked. And so the 1,000-page report, and we have that available if any of you are interested, really goes into detail with those particular studies. And then, because 1,000 pages was more than anybody wanted to look at, and because this overview is rather brief and does not provide the documentation, Early Reading Achievement decided that they would begin an overview of this document, the 1,000 pages, and do a teacher version. And I've also included that in your packet today because I wanted to kind of walk through the sections of it. This particular piece was organized around the five big ideas in reading, which is what the SBRR stands for, the Scientifically Based Reading Research, and it was decided to make a piece that was so useful for teachers that they could look through each of the sections and actually see how that big idea would look in a classroom, what would be some of the instructional methods used, and why were these pieces important to include. So those are the three that we've been handing out as we go around the state. This one's a little expensive, so people have downloaded the summary of it on the website. And the five big ideas in reading, as you see on this next slide, are phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. Of course, we all know that the end result of reading is comprehension, and this is why why we want to do it. And so in presentations, if people prefer to have comprehension first, we oblige and put that first, because really that's what it's all about. This book, however, is organized exactly as the two previous pieces that I showed you. And so the first one would start with phonemic awareness. If you'll take a quick look with me on page 2 of this publication, I wanted to point out to you that if you wanted a quick overview of what's in the National Reading Panel report, the 1,000-page report, one way to see it would be to look at the gold highlighting in this book. And the first one appears actually on page 5. And so these are the findings of the National Reading Panel that were considered to be so significant that they could influence instruction in the classroom. And as you see on page 5, phonemic awareness can be taught and learned. And the next pages go on with a few more findings on phonemic awareness. Recognizing and knowing the individual sounds of the language are considered to be really important precursors for children to be ready to learn to read. And then phonics on page 12... the findings there are also in gold. Systematic and explicit phonics instruction is more effective than non-systematic. And pages 14 and 15 give you the other highlights of the findings of this great big report. The idea of mapping sound to print is behind the importance of phonics, the alphabetic principle. And the research shows, again, in mostly high-poverty schools, that if children have that skill, they will commence at a regular pace and be on a trajectory for success reading at grade level by the end of grade 3. If they're lacking in some of those pieces in kindergarten, the phonemic awareness, and in first grade, they will not make the benchmarks that seem to be very, very important in a child's primary reading instruction. And so this book talks about that and how teachers can use instructional strategies and materials that are focused on helping those particular students. And so those are the two pieces that are the most highly visible in Reading First. And I believe it's important to say that Reading First was premised on what can we do to get all children to read in this report from the National Reading Panel. So it's one way that has been shown to be effective. The science has shown it to be very effective in working with children who normally may not hear those sounds of the language, may not be able to map those to print. Other children may learn without those particular methods. And I wanted to also point out that, as Pat mentioned in his slide, the other significant part of Reading First has to do with assessments and the four different levels that you did have in your slide, and one is screening. And I think this helps a lot of teachers feel very, very comfortable about Reading First, because they realize that when you screen a classroom, not everybody will need to have the kinds of interventions that are described in this program or the kinds of interventions that Reading First will pay for. Many students will be at benchmark or above, and while they will benefit from Reading First, being in a classroom with very, very rich materials, literacy materials, and teachers who are very well trained, the screening will allow those students who would perhaps be eligible for special education by third grade to be screened and early in kindergarten and be given those interventions early on, so that they would not need to be identified later on. I hope that I haven't oversimplified, but I wanted to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I'm glad to hear that phonics is in. Used to be in. When it's out, now it's in again.
I have, my question deals with the 15% of the third graders who might not be at the reading level, and how identifiable they are early on as to mental deficiencies, which would put them in a different category of special help. And my question, and you don't, I just want to get these things out, and I'm not sure if you have the answer for them, but if a child is not reading at level when he leaves, or he or she leaves the third grade, is there any tracking on how long it takes those children to catch up, if they ever do? And do we have a remedial program for kids who are not special ed kids to help them to catch up while they're in the fourth grade so they don't have to repeat the third grade. But No Child Left Behind starts, well, reading first. It's self-explanatory, and I think that you have to read, learn how to read in order to understand content as you move along, and the further you get behind, the harder it is. And part of it, I think, is identification by the parents and efforts by the parents to become involved in a child's reading difficulty, which I know doesn't always happen, and that's not the fault of the child. But there was a bill that was introduced in the 99 session, which was an interesting bill, which said if a child is normal and doesn't read at grade level by the end of the third grade, that that child repeat a grade, and that parents be notified several times along the way that they have to work with that child to get them up to grade level, or else they would stay there and repeat. And that's my concern, and I don't. This is a great program, and I remember having gone through part of this before in the last session and in the House, the explanation of this, and I think it's wonderful, and we're making great strides, but I'm still concerned. Then that opens up the whole question of foreign language, and I know kids come in and they're struggling trying to understand what's going on in a different language, which complicates life. But at least you can identify those kids and work with them separately. But I'm talking about the average student who will slip through the cracks, oftentimes through no fault of their own. And I think that then hopefully there is a special remedial program and that person is identified so they don't have to repeat the whole thing over again.
So. Senator Marsette, I think as they explain the opportunities and the requirements of reading first, that you'll see very quickly that these answers to your question are going to be taken care of.
Good.
Correct, Mr. Chair. If Senator Morissette, if we do not address those issues, you've asked several very important questions. I'd be happy to address them, if you don't mind,
yeah.
I think some of what you're asking we will address as we go on, and we'll be happy to.
Unfortunately, I will have to leave for a few minutes at 4 o'clock, and I may not be here when you address them, but that's okay because I do need to.
Then let me quickly say, if you do have to leave first, early identification. In addition to Reading First, there are funds that are called Early Reading First. These are funds that are targeted around the same principles but are at the preschool level, even the pre-kindergarten level. And we are working with a variety of partners around the state to identify even students before they arrive in kindergarten who may be having reading difficulty. In particular, we are targeting that at students who are entering our schools not speaking English. This is a critical factor, and in No Child Left Behind, it is one of the required areas that we must report our data. So we are very very focused on that. There is no requirement either in the federal law, nor are we proposing in Reading First, for a mandatory retention of students. We are looking at, however, you highlight a very, very important point. This grant is targeted at kindergarten through third grade. Early Reading First is targeted at preschool. We are equally concerned about what happens to students fourth grade through high school. And as the students age and go through the system, their reading needs change. And we need additional work and focus on how we can sustain the growth of our students. And finally, the issue that you mentioned about students with handicapping conditions or special education, just as kind of an alert as we begin our work this year, the federal government will reauthorize the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act this year. Congress last year reauthorized the No Child Left Behind Act, or the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. This year, Congress is turning its attention to special education. This will be a very important conversation this year, and we would love to be able to come back before the committee and share with you some information about special education.
And they're going to increase their funding up to 41%.
We have been, hopefully so, Senator.
Another part of your question was how we are going to identify these students. They're going to be tested 3 times a year. Correct. Mm-hmm. With a new testing system that's going to be implemented. Mm-hmm. And so this is quite different than what we've been doing in the past. So we begin to remediate much sooner.
Exactly. All right, Senator Starr and Senator Morissette, I appreciate your questions. And yes, that's exactly right. Since Senator Starr is part of our reading leadership team, which you will hear about in a few minutes, he does know the intricacies of the grant. And the screening is key. Diagnostic assessments would be the next big piece, so that those children within the first month or so of kindergarten will be the ones that screen low in need of intervention, will have an opportunity to be tested, so that we will know exactly what their deficit is, and then they will be matched with programs and teachers who have been trained through the grant to administer that intervention right away in kindergarten, hoping that they will catch up by the end of kindergarten. That's one of the real hopes. And then if not, that they'll be given an extra boost at the beginning of first grade. Again, every child in the program will be monitored 3 times a year for progress. We call those progress monitoring tools, and they are also available for everyone in the state of Oregon, every child in Oregon, through this grant. The teachers in those classes could use these screening methods to monitor all children. In addition, there will be outcome measures. So we hope that through the sensitive use of assessments, we will be able to target the children who need help and exactly what they do need, so that they will have progress that we could actually monitor over a 2 or 3 week period and be that sensitively monitored, so they will catch up. And your concern is
okay. Yes. My concern is with the parents also, mm-hmm. because if, unless you have parental involvement, then it does. You know, the child, you can focus on the child, but is there anything in here that addresses the parental involvement?
You know, and I forgot this. Okay. I got so excited about showing you this book that the ancillary piece here that's inside the front cover was designed just for parents. And I also wanted to mention that last January, our former superintendent sent both of these to every K through 5 fifth grade teacher in the state. 30,000 went out with a letter from the superintendent telling about reading first and about put reading first, how this particular book kind of encapsulated the major ideas in that upcoming legislation, and to prepare the field for this information. We have had so many people call and ask us for more of these. We've sent thousands of them out, and so I think you'll find that this tool is very, very useful. And yes, the parents will be very, very important in this particular piece.
Okay, one more, if I may.
Yes.
Okay, we have a new accountability feature throughout all the agencies, and that is measurable performance outcomes. Now, it will be interesting if you give us what your measurable performance outcome will be by the next 2 years, because we want to measure the results of your programs. So, and I think it's great. I think what you're doing all of the right things. I still think there are going to be some gaps there that we'll have to refine them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think parents will have to be held more accountable somehow. I don't know how,
correct.
But
correct. But
I applaud what you're doing, and I really like that, our new approach in terms of asking people when they come to the budget to tell us what it is you're going to achieve and how you're going to measure it.
Mm-hmm. And this grant is going to be so heavily monitored that we will have those outcomes on a yearly basis and a report to you each year.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, the department is subject, as all departments are, to the Oregon Progress Board benchmarks, and there are 3 that are directly related to what you're talking about. One is the overall performance of students on state assessments, certainly by third grade. The other is students who indicate that they enter school ready to learn, the percentage of students ready to learn. The specific numerical objective is 90%. Is the overall target by third grade, and to increase by 10% the students who enter school ready to learn. That's defined as students who have a high-quality preschool program. So what we're doing now is trying to work with our partners in developing measures for gathering data around those benchmarks. That's not quite the same as saying that every parent in the state of Oregon will be required to have their children go to a preschool program.
Yeah.
But what we are trying to do is increase the opportunity for that provide the resources for our parents to avail themselves of those types of programs.
I'll be back in this case. Thank you. And I'll be back.
I'm really sorry that I don't know. Did you get any? Excuse me a moment. Any indication whether we're going to have people coming back? I really regret that we don't have full committee here to hear this, because that was my intent. I have been privy to a lot of this information in a way that the other committee members haven't. So it's not as effective. Why don't we take a few minutes break and see if we can...
See, I can step out in the hallway here. Yeah.
Adjourning the meeting for today. We will be coming back Thursday and inviting the Department of Act to finish their presentation on reading first. Thank you kindly.
Okay, thank you.
Meeting's adjourned.